Hi, guys. Good morning.
I know you're not a big fan of either-or questions, but I'm gonna lay two on you right at the beginning. And I know this is overly simplistic, but in your estimation, did the Patriots win that game in San Diego, or did the Chargers lose that game in San Diego?
Well, you know, I learned a lesson pretty early playing in the NFL. I was sitting on the sideline with Drew one day, and he said, Tom, a lot of these games, you know, are lost by the other team. If you don't make mistakes, then teams have a hard time winning. And, you know, we made our fair share of mistakes out there. Don't get me wrong. They probably weren't as evident as, you know, maybe a turnover would be or, you know, as what our coach describes as bad football. But we didn't have really any critical errors in the game. And I think that was probably the difference in that, you know, we didn't certainly play our best game on offense. And with all the opportunities that we had on a short field and with turnovers, we didn't convert them into touchdowns like I wish we would have. But our defense really played phenomenal. And, you know, as with that, some of that's, you know, the other team not executing as well. And some of that is our defense executing very well. So it's hard to say. I mean, if we don't turn it over, and I think there was probably still too many penalties, but, you know, each game ends up being a little bit different, and we just came out on top on this one.
All right, that takes me nicely to the second part of that question, same either-or deal. Were the offensive struggles, in the first half in particular, more a result of what San Diego was doing on defense or the fact that the Patriots weren't executing on offense?
I think it was probably a little of both. I mean, they had a good defense. They play well at home. And this is a team that has been averaging – you know, at home, winning the two previous games by, you know, almost four touchdowns each. So they play well at home, and their defense really, they play well with the crowd noise. And you know, they did some really good things execution-wise. And at the same time, we certainly didn't do anything to help ourselves. So, you know, ultimately it comes down to making plays, and we didn't make any plays out there. In the passing game or the running game, we couldn't do much to move the ball. We, you know, it was better in the second half, but, you know, we just really struggled there in the first half.
Can you tell us a little bit about specifically what the San Diego defense did? I mean, when you talk about lack of execution, is that physically unable to execute, or are you stepping back looking at something maybe you don't recognize? And is confusion a big factor in your ineffectiveness, particularly in the first half?
Yeah, some of it is, you know, it's a lot of it's getting into a rhythm as an offense, and you get into a rhythm by staying on the field, converting third downs, and you know, you could get stopped on first and second down, and then bam, you hit a third down pass, and then you're back into a first down play, and you know, you're assured of six, or, you know, at least six plays on that drive. Well, you know, if you're going three and out or four and out, you can't really get into a rhythm, and we just offensively, it's probably like a jump shooter in basketball, or I mean, everyone's been athletic at some point, and you know, for the golfers, that man, the first, you know, you get into a good rhythm out there, and it just keeps going well, and sometimes you get into a bad rhythm, and it takes a while to pull yourself out of it. So we just got into, I think, a bad rhythm as an offense, we just couldn't overcome some of the plays that San Diego was making. And you know, ultimately that leads to not very good execution on offense.
So what changed? What would be like a specific adjustment, whether it's halftime or third quarter, where you said, let's try this, and what ultimately led to your success on offense, or particularly on that you know, that 17-play drive? What did you change, and what worked?
Yeah, well, I think that's part of it, is you find one or two things that work, and then now you've got the defense a little bit on their heels, and then you can start running a few other things, and your tempo's better, and now your play-action passes become a little bit better. Your screen game becomes a little bit better. When you can get into a long drive like that, you can call a bunch of plays, and one play can set up another play, and then another play. And you know, when you run three plays out there like we did in the first half, there's no play that really sets up the other play because the play didn't work. So, you know, if you play action pass and they stop you, then you're not going to play action pass right again. You're going to try something else. But, you know, then they defend a running play, and okay, now it's third and long. And, in the second half, I thought we did a better job really executing and staying on the field, which enabled us to get to a lot of plays that we wanted to get to in the game that we really thought could take advantage of some of the things they were doing. So, you know, I'd love for it to go great every single series, and I think that's, you know, believe me, there's nobody as frustrated as I am out there when it's not going well. But sometimes you just got to hang in there, and ultimately when you get the opportunity to turn things around, you do. And I think we only had three drives in the second half.
Yeah.
One of them was the touchdown one. Another one we probably should have had a touchdown on when we kicked the field goal, and then the last drive of the game where I would have liked to, you know, seen us convert. But, you know, we're still working away. I mean, we got to get back at it this week. This is a very, very, very good defense that we're playing this week, and I hope we go out and execute better than we did the other day.
Tom, even though there weren't a lot of style points with that win out in San Diego, looking at the big picture, can a case be made that grinding out that kind of win when you're not playing your best and on the road might be more beneficial down the road when you find yourself in those kinds of late and tight games in November and December?
Certainly. Well, anytime, I mean, when you win, man, it's hard to win in this friggin' league. I mean, you look at all the teams on Sunday, and, I mean, Dallas Cowboys, they would love to win any game right
yeah.
now. So it's hard to win. I mean, these guys are good players. They got good coaches. I mean, San Diego, sure, they're not off to a great start this year. They've always found a way to turn it around and rattle off 10 straight wins. They're extremely talented. So you play them on the road, and anything can happen on the road in this league. I mean, any team is capable of winning when we play in a visiting stadium. I mean, it's so much tougher than playing at home, just in the sense that there's a lot of things maybe that we're able to do at home on offense that we couldn't do on the road.
But my question reflects the mental toughness of grinding it out and getting a win when it could have gone the other way. And I guess what I'm asking is it more beneficial down the road to have won a 23-20 game on the road that you could have lost, as opposed to, let's say, you blew them out 27-3?
Well, I don't think it's going to make much of a difference down the road, except that, you know, that's two straight games on the road that we've won in
yep.
pretty tough environments against pretty good teams. So I think we gain confidence in that we can win games on the road against good teams, you know, which is really something we couldn't say last year, you know, which is probably why we weren't a very good football team last season. And that's a big point of emphasis, to win games on the road. Those are important. The home games, you always got to feel good that you have an advantage from the start playing at home. But then when you play on the road, you got to win those games. And if you're going to be a good team, you got to win them. And I think I'm really enjoying the fact that we have won these games. But like I said, we need to do a better job and certainly play better, because there's, you know, the reason why we're going to ultimately win games is because our execution is better, not the crowd, not the weather, not the refs. We're going to win because we're executing at a high level. And, you know, at times in practice, we execute at a high level, and at times, you know, it doesn't always carry over to the game, but you know, we needed to carry over the game more often.
Is it on the flight home? Is it party time? Are you celebrating your win and enjoying the moment, or are you bemoaning the mistakes you made and you know, the sloppy play, maybe the ineffectiveness in the first half, or is everyone just go to sleep?
Well, it's different, probably each road trip. You know, I think there's a lot of excitement when we win games. I mean, it's, you know, everyone's excited in the locker room. You do reflect on the good things and the fact that you won. You always reflect on the things you wish you could have done better. Every player that's, you know, that's halfway decent thinks about the things they need to do better. So, and that's just part of the competitiveness. You can really reflect, and think about the things you need to do better. And oftentimes when you lose, I mean, those are the tough things. That's really when you got to dig deep and you really make significant changes. And sometimes, you know, when you lose, those end up being the best things that happened to you in a season. I hate to say that, but, you know, it really makes you reflect in a different way. And when you have a coach like Coach Belichick, he doesn't care whether you win or lose. For him, it's execution. You know, when we win, he holds us to the same accountability that he does when we lose.
Are you allowed to drink beer on the flight home?
No, there's no alcohol on the plane.
So everyone have their headphones on and kind of off in their own world?
Yeah, I mean, I think people are resting and sleeping, and some are watching movies, some are, you know, talking, playing backgammon, stuff like that. So it's much better.
What do? You watch the film?
Well, we don't. I like to get a jump on next week's opponents. So, you know, I watched all the Viking games this season. So make some notes, and it's pretty valuable time. You know, it's pretty. It's very valuable when you're on the plane. No one can get to you, and it's very quiet for me to be able to kind of reflect on what I need to do better, and also kind of get a jump start on the following week. So, which you don't often get a chance to do that when you play at home, because, you know, typically you have some friends and family in town, and you know, a few hours after the game, maybe you're getting something to eat. But, you know, it's nice on the airplane; you're able to really watch some film and get ahead.
So you really like those cross country flights, is what you're saying?
not
so
all
much.
The time, not all the time, but I'll take it. You know, every once in a while, they're okay.
Hey Tom, you've said on a number of occasions that on 4th and 1, you would like to go for it 100 out of 100 times, and I'm wondering, did the ease with which Benny got into the end zone, running to the left for the touchdown, influence the play call of what you guys tried to do on 4th and 1 at midfield?
Well, I think we, you know, we feel very confident that we can gain a yard. And I said that after the game. I know it's, you know, you'd hate to. They got 3 timeouts. It'd be, you know, a 2-minute drive with a very good passing offense, playing at home, and that's a lot of time to move the ball down the field. So I thought, we all felt, man, if we gain 1 yard, pretty much game's over. So, you know, it's just that we didn't execute it very well. And that, I mean, the reality is, if it, and I said after the game, there's no reason it should come down to a 4th and 1 when, you know, we had the opportunity as an offense that we had all day. And, you know, I like the fact that coach feels that we can get it. I love the fact that coach feels like our defense can stop him. You know, but he's expecting us to get that, and we're all expecting to get it. And hopefully next time we're put in that situation, we're able to do it.
Tom, you remember everything down in distance in preseason games from 2007. I'm wondering, off the top of your head, do you know how many times you have gone for 3rd and 1 or 4th and 1 with a quarterback sneak and not made it? I mean, I know your percentages are very high. I can't think of very many, if at all.
It's not often. You know, we do a good job blocking up front in the middle with Cope and Connolly and Steve and in that situation, I mean, they were really loaded up on the inside. So, I mean, I'd love to sneak it. I'd also love to, you know, give it to a 230-pound back, too.
Get out of the way.
Hell of a lot stronger than I am. So, you know, we just didn't execute it very well. And that was kind of the way our day went. I mean, the reality is, and we as an offense have to go in there and, you know, we'll watch the film critically today and come out of it, hopefully with better awareness of what we need to do to improve as a team and improve as an offense. And because we're going to need to improve, we can't keep going out there and playing inconsistently, especially in the first half, like we really have here for the last probably 3 games.
Hey, I don't know if there are hard and fast rules with every team in the National Football League that says, if you don't practice, you don't play. I assume there probably are for most guys. I don't know that they apply to Tom Brady or maybe Brett Favre. If indeed with a double ankle fracture, he doesn't play this week, my guess is that if Childress thinks he can help him, he would play on Sunday.
Sure.
Given that, what's the effect of Favre playing this game or any game without a week of practice?
Well, for him, probably not much. I mean, it doesn't matter much. He's played for you know, so many games. He's practiced so many times. He's got the timing down with all those players. You know, we got to expect that he's going to play. I mean, there's a reason why he's had this, you know, probably one of the most incredible streaks. He up there, Cal Ripken, with the consecutive games played streak. I mean, that's phenomenal because, look, you can be as tough as you want, but sometimes, you know, like Tony Romo last night in the game, or you just can't make it out there. I mean, you get hit, you fall awkwardly, you break a bone that just really won't allow you to play. And Brett's played through some incredible injuries. I know knee injuries, ankle injuries before. You know, he's had broken bones before. So if there's any chance of him playing, I mean, he's going to make it out there. He's not, you know, he's the toughest, one of the toughest players to ever suit up in the NFL. So, and to continue to play at a high level with that being said, it's not like, you know, he just goes out there and, you know, and doesn't play well when he's injured. He plays well no matter what. So, you know, we got our hands full with him this week as well.
Tom, the Vikings head coach Brad Childress said a couple of eye-opening, eyebrow-raising comments this week. The first was immediately after the game, he sort of threw his quarterback under the bus publicly and said, our guy has to work within the confines of our system. You can't hand the other team a ball. You can't be given in a game like this 6 points going the other way. Now, I know what happens behind closed doors. I know what happens in meeting rooms. I know what happens man-to-man. Is it helpful if a head coach calls somebody out publicly like that?
Well, I think every head coach has different styles to motivate their players. So, you know, Coach Belichick, he doesn't ever do that to anybody. I mean, it doesn't matter if I threw 7 interceptions, he would never do that. But, you know, there's no doubt that he's going to bring that up to me, you know, at some point. I mean, then certainly probably right away to say, you know, in front of the team, you know, as well. So he's going to make the point that he needs to make in order to try to get his players to play better. And you know, Coach Belichick does that. Tony Dungy did that. You know, and everyone does it in different ways. So we're all big boys. We can handle the criticism. And if we don't do something well, I mean, we know that we didn't do something well. And oftentimes players are their harshest critics. So, you know, when I don't play well, I know it. And I know it. Sometimes it does hurt your ego a bit when somebody tells you, you got to do it better. But that's the truth. And if that's what you need as a player, then, you know, in the end, you'll be pretty happy that someone actually came out and said it, because maybe that will motivate you a little bit more to get it improved.
All right. Well, criticism takes us to the second Brad Childress comment, and it took place yesterday, I believe. He called the Patriots one of the all-time great signal stealers in the league. He was referencing a Monday night game in 2006 between the Patriots and the Vikings. You guys crushed them in the Metrodome 31-7. You went 29 for 43, 372, and 4 touchdowns. Take a listen as what Brad Childress said as he recalled that game.
I'm mindful of the last time we faced them here on Monday Night Football, and it was like a surgical procedure. You know, now that's back when we used to signal and things like that. And I remember having a conversation with Mike Tomlin about these are some of the all-time great signal stealers. And in fact, that's what was going on. You know, they were holding, and you know, we were signaling from the sideline. They're good at it. It's like stealing signals from a catcher.
He calls the Patriots the all-time great signal stealers in the NFL. What do you think about that?
Well, we've been called a lot worse than that. So, you know, that game was so long ago. You know, they had a great defense. You're right. Mike Tomlin was the coordinator at the time. And you know, I remember us executing pretty well that night. So, you know, everyone has probably, you know, I've heard different guys in the past say that. I mean, that's come and gone, and really that's been not a part of football here for a long time. So, and we still won a lot of games, and you know, in 07 we didn't, you know, they changed the rule and so forth. So, you know, I don't buy a whole lot into that. The team that's going to win this weekend is the team that plays better. I can promise you that.
You can still steal signals without a video camera, correct?
I don't know. You know, I have no idea. I mean, I don't engage in any of that, so I don't know what they're doing these days to try to, you know, get an advantage.
What games do you look at? I know you were watching Vikings tape on your way home, and do you look at the games just from this year? Or would you look at a game like that back from 06 when you had your way with the Vikings defense?
Sure. Well, it's a different coordinator now, so typically coordinators, you know, they have their style, and it may be some of the same players, which you can kind of see how your guys may have matched up against particular players, but a lot of our guys have changed as well. So going back that far, I don't know how much that will really help. You know, what their team is this year is what they've showed on film. So to see everything that they've done this year, you know, that's where you focus your attention on. This is their 2010 version of the Vikings, and to watch all their games and to kind of see the style that they're playing with and the kind of aggressiveness that they play with. I mean, it's a team with a phenomenal front seven, great pass rush, great linebackers. They're a little bit younger in the secondary, but they got quite a few playmakers back there. So this is as good a defense as we face. And we're going to need to have a great week of practice to prepare for them.
Not that you watch a lot of Viking offensive football, but have you noticed what they're doing with Randy now that he's there? And the second part of that question is, will you wait till after the game to meet and greet with Randy?
Yeah, I haven't seen any of their games. Since he's, I guess I saw maybe the first quarter of their Jet game. Mm. But after that, I haven't seen really what they're doing. And he and I have texted a few times. So probably after the game. I mean, that's kind of how I like to do it. I'll see you guys after the game. Getting ready to play a game, I don't think it's always the best time to go hang out and talk and BS. So, I'll go out there and wish him luck maybe if I see him. But, probably say certainly hi to him after the game.
Hey, only four catches for 25 yards for Wes Welker. We're not used to seeing that, Tom. Is there something different? San Diego do something different to contain him? And do you worry other teams will do the same thing?
Well, I think that's, I got to get him the ball. I think that's what that tells me. Wes is an incredible player, and he's a big part of why our offense goes. So on days where, we do get stopped, they try to take him away and certain things they did to take him away, certain things that I need to certainly do a better job of getting him the ball because he's as good a player as, we've ever had here. So, that's I take responsibility for that. And there's no reasons why he should only have four catches for 25 yards. He should always have more. And I got to get him the ball.
Tom, what shocked you more? Oakland laying 59 on the Broncos in Denver, Buffalo amassing 505 against the Ravens defense in Baltimore, or the Browns smacking the Saints in New Orleans?
I know. I mean, I said yesterday, it's just a crazy year in the NFL. And there's so many teams that, man, you thought would be pick right up where they left off last year, and that's not the case. And it's not like it hasn't happened before. I mean, it's different teams, it's different schedules, it's different situations, it's different coaching. It's guys have different seasons. So, those times where you have a great team and you have a great opportunity, you got to really capitalize on those. I think that's what that means to me. And you don't always have an opportunity as a team to accomplish your goals based on injuries or, certain things that happen over the course of the year. So, I'm proud of the fact that we're in it. We're in the thick of it this year. We're 5-1. We have as good a record as any team in the league right now. We've got our whole season ahead of us. We've won some tough games on the road. We know we need to make improvements. But, we've shown a good attitude to go out there and practice and get better. So, it's a great opportunity for us, going forward. And I think everyone's looking forward to it. We've worked pretty hard, and hopefully it continues to pay off. But this week against Minnesota is going to challenge us quite a bit.
Hey, Thomas, the Celts and the Heat open the NBA season tonight. I'm wondering if you have any insight into the mindset of an aging, veteran, experienced all-star team trying to put it together for one more championship run with a small window of opportunity.
Yeah, I love the Celtics. And they were one game away last year from winning it all. I mean, those guys know how to get it done. I mean, they did it a few years ago. Last year it was heartbreaking to lose to the Lakers the way they did. But I mean, if anybody knows how to do it, it's Doc and KG and Ray and Paul Pierce, who's been such a great player for so long. They had Shaq, Jermaine O'Neal. I mean, they got a lot of great players, so they don't need any advice from me. They know how to do it, and I'll be excited to watch them. They got a great opportunity as well. I hope they take advantage of it.
Will you be in the building?
No, I'm not going to go tonight. We got practice tomorrow morning. It's a big week, so I got plenty of work to do on the Vikes.
Will you stay up and watch the Giants, or is that going to be on too late for you?
That's tomorrow night, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. What is it, 8 o'clock start, 8:30, 9 o'clock?
I think it's 8.
Yeah, so.
Which means it'll end about 1 in the morning.
Yeah, there's no way I'm staying up for that long. That's six. I don't know why they start so late. I mean, how do they get the kids?
They don't. They don't care.
It's because of you West Coast people. They're catering to you.
Hey, I've been on the West Coast for 15 years.
Hey, will you stay home and give out the Reese's cups, or will you hit the road with the kid and ring the doorbells and trick or treat? You got to do one or the other.
That's Sunday night. We got a 4:15 game. I think a lot of the trick or treaters would be done by the time our game ends. There's probably not too many kids walking the streets of Boston. You'd have to go to, you know, one of those nice suburbs outside of Boston and go trick or treating.
If you don't give anything out, though, they're going to egg your
house. Yeah, they'll get you.
Yeah,
they might.
Hey, Tom, I know you're building a playground later this afternoon. I can't picture you as a hammer and saw guy.
No, you can't.
No.
Why not? I don't understand why.
He'll measure things.
Yeah.
Work construction jobs in the past. I did what I could to get by. In college, I worked a construction job, so I know how to do a few things on the playground.
Well, Schilling has always said that you learn as a pitcher in Major League Baseball to shut car doors with your left hand.
Shake hands with your left hand
to protect that right hand. So if you got the hammer and saw going, just put that right hand behind your back.
Yeah, yeah. No, I learned my lesson about, you know, messing around with my hand last year, and I'm not doing that again this year. It's not worth it.
All right, Tom, we'll be watching on Sunday. Halloween, Randy Moss, Trick or Treat, Brett Favre. What could be better than that? We'll talk to you next Monday.
Thanks, guys. Good to talk to you.